You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English, and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 99 by Rudolf Steiner, 14 lectures, translated by Johanna Kallas, entitled Rosicrucian Wisdom. This is Lecture 13, given in Munich on the 5th of June, 1907, entitled The Future of Humanity. Our task today is to mention a few aspects of the progress of human evolution in the future, and of what is called initiation. It is by means of initiation that present-day human beings can pass in advance through stages of life which are otherwise only to be passed through by humanity in the future. With regard to the first question, you may think it audacious to try and speak about the future, or even that it is impossible to find out anything about the future of the human being. Nevertheless, if you consider the matter a little, you will find the idea of knowing something about the future not so unfounded after all. You need only compare this with what the ordinary researcher, the scientist, for example, can know with regard to future events. He can tell you definitely that if he mixes oxygen, hydrogen, and sulfur under certain conditions, sulfuric acid always results. You can say exactly what will happen when you intercept rays by a mirror. In fact, with regard to external life, you can go even further, for you can predict eclipses of the sun and moon over indefinitely long periods of time. How is it possible to do this? It can be done because, and in so far as, you know the laws of physical life. So if someone knows the spiritual laws of life, from these laws he can likewise say what must come about in the future. Here, however, a question generally arises which weighs heavily on people's minds. It is so easy to imagine that it would be a contradiction of freedom, of people's own voluntary acts, if it could be known in advance what will happen. This is an incorrect idea. When you combine sulfur, hydrogen, and oxygen under certain conditions, sulfuric acid arises. That is determined by the laws of combination. Whether you do it, however, depends on your will. And so it is also in the spiritual course of human evolution. What will happen will be done by human beings in entire freedom of will. And the higher an individual develops, the freer he will be. You must not think that it is already decided what an individual will do in the future, merely because one can see it in advance. Most people, however, have no correct understanding of this problem, and in fact it presents very great difficulties. Since ancient times, philosophers have tormented themselves with the question of human freedom and the law of predestined phenomena. Practically all that has been written in this field is extremely unsatisfactory. For as a rule, people cannot distinguish between foreseeing and being preordained. Seeing in advance is in fact no different from looking out to some distant spot. If you look to a point some way off, let us say the corner of the street over there, and you see a person giving a penny to someone, have you brought about this action? Has it been caused through the fact that you see it? No, you only see that he does it, and that exercises no pressure on his act. In a certain respect, the situation is the same in the case of time, only people cannot grasp it. Let us suppose you are reincarnated in a couple of thousand years, and you then do something of your own free will. That is the same as the example of the gift of the penny. Under certain circumstances, the seer sees what is done in the future. Yet this future act is just as little determined by the present point in time as the gift of the penny by the point in space. People often say if one sees that something will happen, it must be predetermined. But then one is confounding the present with the future. In fact, it would be no prevision into the future if it were already predestined. You are not seeing anything that is already there, but something that will come. You must accurately grasp the concept of seeing into the future. You must exercise and practice this in patient meditation. Only then does one find it possible to understand these things correctly. After these introductory words, we will now mention a few things about the evolution of humanity in the future. We have today reached the point where humanity has descended most deeply into matter, where human beings apply their spiritual forces to the construction and manufacture of instruments and machines that serve their personal life. Connected with this, there has been an ever-increasing densification, both of the human being and the earth as a whole. We have seen that the mineral kingdom, as we call it, the densest part of the earth, only arose at a definite point of time in our evolution. It was only then that the human being entered upon his present earthly development, and the division of the sexes and other phenomena went hand in hand with that. At the time when the human being had not as yet entered this physical development, which contains a mineral kingdom, he was still of a much finer, softer nature. To gain some idea of this, consider how the reproduction of the human race took place in those ancient times before the two sexes were in existence. At that time, the human being, who was still androgynous and of a less dense, finer corporeality, brought forth another being from within. Reproduction was not as it is today, but rather like in spiritualist seances, when the ether body of some other being proceeds from the medium. That gives you more or less a picture of this materialization from oneself, the manner of human reproduction in ancient times. It was like a pressing out from human beings who were ready to continue their own development. Thus you see that a descent into the world of matter is connected with the densification of the human being in the cosmos. There was also another force connected with it, which could never have developed without it, egoism. Egoism has a good and a bad side. It is the foundation of human independence and freedom, but in its reverse aspect, the foundation too of all that is bad and evil. But human beings had to go through this force of egoism if they were to learn to do good out of their own free will. Through the forces that had guided them previously, they would always have been impelled to the good. However, they needed the possibility of going their own way. Just as they have descended, they must now ascend again to spirituality. And as the descent is linked with the predominance of egoism, so does the ascent depend on the selflessness of human beings, their feeling of sympathy for one another becoming stronger and stronger. Humanity has evolved through various epochs, first through the old Indian, then the Persian, the Egyptian, Chaldean, Babylonian, the Greco-Latin, to the present, the fifth epoch. This, in due course, will be followed by a sixth. As human evolution is working toward this, it is at the same time working at overcoming the principle that has been strongest since the time when the ether body united with the point in the brain of which I spoke to you yesterday. That was the time of the fall into the deepest egoism. The human being was egoistic in his earlier evolution too, but in a different way. The egoism that enters so deeply into the soul in our present age is inseparable from the predominating materialism of our age. A spiritual age will denote the overcoming of this egoism. Therefore, Christianity and all movements imbued with genuine religious life have worked consciously toward breaking through all the old blood ties. Christianity has made a radical statement in the words, "He who does not forsake father, mother, wife, child, brother, sister, cannot be my disciple." This indicates nothing less than that in place of the ancient blood ties, there must enter the spiritual bond between soul and soul, between one human individual and another. The only question now is, what are the ways and means by which humanity may attain spirituality, that is, the overcoming of materialism, and at the same time reach what may be called the bond of brotherhood, the expression of universal human love. One might imagine that universal human love need only be stressed strongly enough, and that then it must come about. Or that one should found fraternities which aim at the goal of a universal human love. Spiritual science is never of this opinion. On the contrary, the more people speak of universal brotherly love and humanity, becoming in a sense intoxicated by these, the more egoistic they become. For like a lust of the senses, there is also a lust of the soul. It is in fact a refined voluptuousness to say, I will become morally higher and higher. Although this thought does not lead to ordinary conventional egoism, it does lead to a subtle form of egoism arising from such voluptuousness. It is not by emphasizing love or sympathy that these are generated in the course of human evolution. Humanity is much more likely to be led to that bond of brotherhood by something else, namely by spiritual knowledge itself. There is no other means of bringing about a universal human brotherhood than the speaking of esoteric knowledge through the world. One may talk forever of love and the brotherhood of mankind. One may found thousands of fraternities. They will not lead to the desired goal, however well-intentioned they may be. The point is to use the right means, to know how to found this bond of brotherhood and sisterhood. Only those whose lives are grounded in universal esoteric truth, valid for all human beings, find themselves together in the one truth. As the sun unites the plants which strive toward it, while yet remaining individually separate, so must the truth to which all are striving be a uniform one. Then all human beings will come together. But they must work energetically toward truth, for only then can they live together in harmony. You might object that surely all are striving toward the truth, but that there are different standpoints, and therefore strife and dissensions arise. This denotes an insufficiently thorough knowledge of truth. One must not plead that there may be different standpoints. One must first experience that truth is single and indivisible. It does not depend on popular vote. It is true in itself. Or would you put it to the vote as to whether the three angles of a triangle add up to 180 degrees? Whether millions of people agree with this or not a single one, when you have recognized it, it is true for you. There is no democracy about truth. Those who are not yet in harmony have not penetrated far enough into the truth, and this is the origin of all dispute over truth. You might say yes, but one person asserts this and another that in esoteric matters. In genuine esotericism, that is not so. It is the same in esoteric things as in materialistic things. There, too, someone asserts this, and another that. But then one of them is wrong. It is the same with genuine esotericism. But people often have a bad habit of judging esoteric matters before they have understood them. The aim of the sixth epoch of humanity will be to popularize esoteric truth in the widest circles. That is the mission of that epoch. A society which is united in spirit has the task of carrying this esoteric truth everywhere, right into life, and applying it practically. This is precisely what is lacking in our age. Only look how our epoch is searching, and how no one can find the right solution. There are innumerable problems: the education problem, women's suffrage, medicine, the social problem, the food question. People chip away at these problems. Endless articles are written, and each talks from his or her own standpoint, without being willing to study the esoteric truth that lies at the center. It is not a matter of having some abstract knowledge of the truths of spiritual science, but of applying them directly to life. of studying the social problem, the education problem, in fact, the whole range of human life, from the standpoint of real esoteric wisdom. But then, it might be argued, one would have to know the highest wisdom. This arises from the mistake of thinking one must always understand what one makes use of in life. But that is not necessary. Understanding of the highest principles often comes much later than their application. If humanity had wished to wait in the matter of digestion until the laws of digestion were understood, then the evolution of humanity would not have been possible. So, too, one does not need to be aware of all spiritual laws in order to let spiritual science flow into everyday life. It is not a matter of saying spiritual science is spiritual science, but of taking spiritual science seriously in everyday life. That is precisely the way in which the Rosicrucian method deals with the spiritual. Fewer abstractions, but instead the study of the problems of everyday life. Do you think that the child knows all the grammatical rules of speech once it has learned to speak? First it learns to speak, and then it learns grammar. So we must stress the value of using spiritual teachings to broach what lies directly around us, before occupying ourselves with what is to be found in the highest worlds, with information concerning the astral plane and Devakan. This is the only way to understand what exists in our surroundings, and where we ourselves must play our part. We shall find that it is our task to bind together, through the unifying bonds of spiritual wisdom, those portions of humanity which have been extricated from the old bonds of blood and race. Then, inasmuch as we evolve from the fifth into the sixth, and then into the seventh epoch, the ancient connections of race and blood will be increasingly lost. Humanity will become freer of physical ties in order to form groups from the aspect of the spirit. It was a bad habit in theosophy to speak of races as if they would always remain. The concept of race will lose its meaning in the near future, which means over the next 2,000 years. To state incessantly that seven, and again seven, races have always evolved in the world is the speculative extension of an idea that only holds good for our age. Looking backward and forward, it has never been said from clairvoyant vision, from esoteric wisdom. Races have arisen as everything else arises, and as everything dies out again, so will races die out too. Those who have always spoken of races will have to accustom themselves to making their ideas more fluid. Not to do so is merely lazy. If you only look a little way into the future, you find that ideas applied to the past and present are already no longer valid. It is most important that people should not consider that something they have once brought into a beautiful concept is a truth for all time. People must get into the habit of making ideas fluid, of recognizing that ideas change. That will be an advance. The ability of passing over from rigidly dogmatic ideas to fluid and flexible ones must be cultivated in those who would be the bearers of the future. For just as times change, so must our ideas change too, if we could understand the times. The soul now lives in a human body which you perceive distinctly with your senses. By what means has it arisen? It was very different in earlier times when the soul descended. In fact, for our present material outlook, the difference is even comical. The soul took up its abode in the body. By what means has the human body evolved to its present form? By means of the soul itself, working in the body during all its incarnations. You can form an idea of how the soul has worked on the body if you consider what possibility has remained to us today, in this materialistic age, for working on our body. We can now work relatively little on our dense physical body. Look at the way you temporarily affect your body and its physiognomy. For instance, something gives you a fright or makes you anxious. The impression of anxiety or fear makes you turn pale. Your physical appearance is also affected by the blush of shame or embarrassment. It passes away again, but you see how it is caused. Something acts on the soul, and the effects extend to the blood, and thence to the physical body, changing its very appearance. The effect can be still more intensive. You know that people who lead a life of thought have it very much in their power to create an impression on their countenance of their intellectual work. You can observe whether or not someone has lived a life of mental activity. So people do still work on their external expression, and someone with noble feelings displays them in dignified movements. These are only slight remnants of how human beings have worked on themselves over thousands of years. Whereas nowadays you can only bring blood to your cheeks and drive it away again, in earlier times human beings were entirely under the influence of a picture world, which was the expression of a world of spirit. The effect of this influence was that the human being could work much more creatively on his body, and the body was also more soft and yielding. There was a time when you could not merely stretch out your hand, when you could not only point with your finger, but when you could send your will into your hand, and so form it that you could thrust out fingers as extensions. There was a time when feet were not yet permanent, but could be pushed out as extensions when a human being needed them. Thus, through the pictures which he received from the surrounding world, the human being shaped his own body. Today, in our material age, this molding is unimaginably slow, but a time will come again when it will proceed more rapidly. In the future, human beings will again acquire more influence over their physical bodies. We shall see, when we consider initiation, by what means they will gain this influence. Although they may not reach it in one lifetime, yet they will be able to do much for the next incarnation. Thus human beings themselves will bring about the future shape of their bodies. Inasmuch as they become softer and softer, inasmuch as they separate themselves from the hard part, they will be approaching their future. An age will come when they will live above their earthly part, as was the case in times gone by. This condition, which is comparable to your present sleep condition, will then be replaced by another, when the human being will be able to draw his ether body out of his physical body at will. It will be as if the denser part were here, below, on earth, while the human being makes use of it from outside, like an instrument. Human beings will no longer carry their bodies about and live within them, but will float above them. The bodies themselves will have become rarefied and more delicate. This seems fantastic now, but one can be distinctly aware of it from spiritual laws, just as one can calculate future eclipses of the sun and moon from the laws of astronomy. Above all, it will be upon the reproductive force that the human being will work. He will transform it. Many people cannot imagine that there will ever be a different reproductive process, but it will be so. The process of reproduction will be altered. The reproductive process and all that is connected with it will pass in the future to another organ, the organ that is already preparing to become the future organ of reproduction is the human larynx. Today it can only bring forth vibrations of the air, can only impart to the air what lies in a word that goes forth from it, so that the vibrations correspond to the word. Later on, not only will the word press forward in its rhythm from the larynx, but it will be irradiated by the human being. It will be suffused by substance itself. Just as today the word only becomes airwaves, so in the future the person's inner being, his own likeness, which today is in his word, will issue from the larynx. The human being will proceed from the human being. The human being will speak forth the human being. This, in the future, will be how a new human being is born, by being spoken forth by another. Such things throw a specific light on phenomena in our surroundings, which no ordinary science can explain. The transformation of reproduction, which will once again be non-sexual, will supersede the previous manner of reproduction. That is why in the male organism at the age of puberty, a change also takes place in the larynx, making the voice deeper. This is a direct indication of how these two things are interconnected. Thus, spiritual wisdom throws light again and again on facts of life and illumines phenomena for which materialistic science can give you no explanation. Just as the larynx will be transformed, so too will the human heart. It is the organ which has an intimate connection with the circulation. Science believes that the heart is a kind of pump. This is a grotesquely fantastic idea. Esoteric wisdom has never made statements as fantastic as those of modern materialism. It is the feelings of the soul which give rise to the movement of the blood. The soul drives the blood, and the heart moves because it in turn is driven by the blood. The truth is thus the exact opposite of what materialistic science states. Today, however, we cannot guide our heart at will. When we feel anxious, it beats faster, since the feeling acts on the blood, and this quickens the motion of the heart. But what is suffered involuntarily by people today will later on, at a higher stage of evolution, be in their own power. Later on, they will drive their blood by their own volition and cause the movement of their heart as today they move the muscles of their hands. The heart, with its peculiar structure, is a crux, a riddle for modern science. It has striated muscle fibers, which are otherwise only to be found in voluntary muscles. Why? Because the heart has not yet reached the end of its evolution, but is an organ of the future. Because it will in the future be a voluntary muscle. Thus it already shows the rudiments of this in its structure. All that goes on in the soul changes the organism. Imagine someone who is able to create his own likeness through the spoken word, whose heart has become a voluntary muscle, who will have altered yet other organs. Then you have a conception of the future of the human race in future planetary incarnations of Earth. Humanity will progress on our Earth as far as it is possible under the influence of the mineral kingdom. This mineral kingdom, in spite of having arisen the last, will be the first to disappear again in its present form. The human being will then no longer build up his body from mineral substances as today. The coming human body will only incorporate into itself substances of a plant nature. All that works in the human being today as mineral will disappear. Here is a seemingly grotesque example. Today we spit out our ordinary saliva. It is a mineral product, for the physical body is an interaction of mineral processes. When human beings have ended their mineral evolution, they will no longer have mineral spittle. It will be of a plant nature. People will, so to speak, spit flowers. Glands will no longer secrete what is mineral, but only a vegetable substance. The mineral kingdom will be brought to an end by the evolutionary return of humanity to vegetable plant existence. Thus the human being will pass on to Jupiter by expelling all that is mineral and progressing to the creativeness of the plant. Later still he will pass over to animal creativeness. Animals will be different from those of today. When his heart will have progressed so far that it can appear as a creator, then the human being will create in the animal world as today he creates in the mineral kingdom. This is when the Venus incarnation will arise. When the human being can create this kind of virtue, of uttering his own likeness, Then will the meaning of evolution be complete. Then will the words be fulfilled, quote, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness," close quote. Only by observing this aspect, that the body will be molded by the soul, will the human being really transform the human race. Only through a thinking trained in the esoteric and spiritual sense will there appear what has been described as the transformation of the heart and the larynx. What humanity thinks today, that will it be in the future. A humanity that thinks materialistically will produce frightful beings in the future, and a humanity that thinks spiritual thoughts will work in such a way upon the future organism, transforming it, that beautiful human bodies will proceed from it. What the materialistic mode of thought brings about has not yet been completed. We have two streams today, a great materialistic one which fills the earth, and a small spiritual one which is restricted to only a few human beings. Distinguish between soul evolution and race evolution. Do not think that if races pass over to a grotesque form, the soul too will do the same. All materialistically thinking souls work on the production of evil race formations. And what is done of a spiritual nature causes the bringing forth of a good race. Just as humanity has brought forth creations that have retrogressed as animals, plants, and minerals, so will a portion split off and represent the evil part of humanity. In the body, which will meanwhile have grown soft, the inner badness of the soul will express itself externally. Just as older conditions that have degenerated to the ape species seem grotesque to us today, so will materialistic races remain at the standpoint of evil, peopling the earth as evil races. It will lie entirely with the human being as to whether a soul wants to remain in the bad race or wants to ascend by spiritual culture to a good race. These are the things that we must know if we want to live into the future with real knowledge. Otherwise, we go through the world blindfolded, for forces are working in humanity which we must recognize and to which we must pay attention. A person would neglect his duty to humanity if he did not wish to become acquainted with the forces that work in the direction of right evolution or against it. Knowledge for the sake of knowledge would be egoism. Those who want to know in order to look into higher worlds act egoistically. But those who try to carry this knowledge into the direct practice of everyday life further the advance of the coming evolution of humanity. It is extremely important for us to learn more and more to put into practice what exists as the conception of spiritual science. So you see, the spiritual movement has a quite specific goal, namely to create a mold for future humanity in advance. The goal can be reached in no other way than through the acceptance of spiritual wisdom. This is the thought that lives in the mind of one who conceives spiritual science as the great task of humanity. He thinks of it as inseparable from evolution, and he regards it not as an object of desire, but as a task and duty that is laid upon him. The more we acknowledge this, the more rapidly do we approach the future form of humanity in the sixth age. Just as long ago, in ancient Atlantis, in the neighborhood of modern Ireland, the advanced human beings journeyed eastward in order to found the new civilizations, so do we now have the task of working toward the great moment in the sixth age, when humanity will undertake a great spiritual ascent. We must endeavor to come out of materialism again, and societies with a spiritual aim must undertake to guide humanity not from motives of arrogance and pride, but as a task and duty. So a certain group of people must join together in order to prepare the future. But this union is not to be conceived of geographically. All ideas of locality have lost their meaning in this connection, because it is no longer a question of racial relationships. The point will be for people over the whole earth to find each other spiritually in order to fashion the future in a positive way. For this reason, 400 years ago, when our epoch plunged its deepest into matter, the Rosicrucian Brotherhood laid emphasis on that practical spiritual science which contains an answer to all problems of everyday life. Here you have the ascending evolution to counterbalance the descending one, just as old knowledge acts as a dividing force, as is shown by Mautner's title, Critique of Language. So the spiritual current of thought seeks the unifying bond of spiritual wisdom. Hence arises the new schooling of initiation, which is directly concerned with leading humanity over into a new cycle of time. In this way, the concept of initiation is connected with the principle of human evolution. The end of Lecture 13.